Brunson, Sabonis, two-man game inside. Domas, dominant, dynamite inside on that one.
Not afraid, and he got some dog in him.
And the steal, they can tie it with a three. Murray, yes! A Murray miracle in the desert!
Welcome back to another episode of the Kings Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got Hunter Patterson of The Athletic here as well. One day removed from a tough game against the Dallas Mavericks. But overall, how you doing, Hunter?
I am feeling the effects of a back-to-back. Like, I was out there playing maybe 20, 30 minutes. So kind of getting adjusted right now. How are you?
That is fair enough. I'm the same. Still, I'm not a morning person. And I don't even know if it's technically, like, it is still technically morning. But
100%, bro. Anytime before 12.
It could be 11. You know. It's still morning, but I think there's some people that would call me crazy for still calling this morning. But, you know, we work late is my excuse here. And what was going on last night was a pretty tough Kings loss. But I want to backtrack a little bit before we get to that. Kevin Huerter went down a while ago with a dislocated shoulder and a labral tear. And we still have no word on his timeline. I would be surprised if we saw him again this season, considering there's 10 games left. Now, you know, crazy things happen, but at this point, it seems like we're probably going to be going into the postseason with the Sacramento Kings starting Keon Ellis at that two spot, something a lot of people had been kind of clamoring for even before the Huerter injury. And, you know, even if they've decided to go in that direction, no Huerter is a loss to the depth, no matter. And I think that that can get a little overlooked here, but there have been some defensive improvements. How have you kind of felt in the games that we've seen Keon starting since that?
Seems like Keon's just starting to get more and more comfortable offensively. He naturally seems as comfortable as anyone on the defensive end. So it's been encouraging to see his just awareness and I think aggressiveness continue to ramp up on the offensive end. But, I mean, as you mentioned, the Kings do play a different brand of basketball offensively without Kevin. He's usually running off a lot of DHOs. They have split action for him, and he's really effective in those when his shot is falling. So rest up, Kev. Hope he heals up quickly. But I'm kind of the same train of thought where we may have seen the last of Kev for this season.
Yeah, and like Keon's been playing well. There's that Orlando game where he had a season career high 19 points. He's taken off the dribble shots to close that game. He also has 6 assists, 2 steals, a block. Like, this is just kind of what he does. There's a 5 block game in here. That's the game that Kevin ends up going down against Memphis. And before the Dallas game, the Kings had won 6 of their last 8. They were looking really good defensively. And I think a lot of it had to do with the whistle being a little bit different post All-Star break, which is an interesting conversation because the league will tell you it's not happening. Right. And, you know, we've heard Malik talk about it, De'Aaron talk about it, Mike Brown talk about it, but it's talked about in like a little bit of a weird way, obviously, because nobody's trying to go out there and get fined. And none of us are trying to ask questions that's going to get anybody fined. But I think that they've been allowed to play more physical. And I think that's helped them. Is there anything outside of just like physicality really that you've noticed that's led to some of these recent improvements? And obviously the Dallas game is its own thing and we'll get there. But prior to that,
I think they just seem to be more bought in than ever. And you would obviously hope that that comes earlier in the season, but it's also not a bad time for your team to reiterate a lot of the same things that Coach Brown is, and they continue to talk about, like you said, the physicality being allowed a bit more. The whistles are a bit looser, I guess you could say, and that's working to their benefit because early in the season when they were trying to focus more on defense, they were in foul trouble often. And if this is the way the postseason is going to be officiated, which history tells us it is, then it's good for them to get these reps in and continue to just start feeling comfortable being as physical as they can. So I don't want to sound like Mike Brown, but I guess the contests probably have been a bit better as far as the opposing team's 3-point opportunities have gone. But yeah, I think they're just in a rhythm of playing more physical than they were earlier in the season.
Yeah, there's definitely that physicality, which I think they're allowed to get away with. I think it's something they learned also last postseason. Like you mentioned, history kind of shows, and they got to experience that last year. And I think there was an aspect of that was an adjustment. Those first couple games, I know the Kings won the first two, but the shooting was really tough, especially in those ones. And I think there was an adjustment to that physicality and why the shooting was tough throughout most of the series for Harrison and Kevin and Keegan for the first half of it. They weren't already accustomed to that. And now they're getting ahead of it pretty much before or during this final regular season stretch. And I think the 3-point defense that you mentioned definitely plays a part. They were 30th pre-All-Star break in opponent 3-point percentage, 39.7 post-All-Star break. And these numbers are all before the Dallas game, for what it's worth, just because when I happen to pull these, it's not me trying to ignore the horrible game.
Yeah, not
sure. I swear. Post-All-Star break without the Dallas game, they had been, opponents had shot 36% from three, right around 15th. And the last eight, where they had won six again before the Dallas game, teams were shooting 31.5% from three. So definitely a lot of emphasis there. Mike Brown even shared that, like, he's never had to go and coach the details of a closeout, for example, defensively, like he has with this group. And I guess, how do you take that?
Sometimes it could be necessary. And I think that probably is a result of Mike being one of two coaches, I want to say, who have had like back-to-back winning records in SAC. So unfortunately, there's probably over like the last 10-ish years, I want to say.
I think since they've moved to SAC, it's only been him and Adelman.
Yeah. So
that damn reaction you had was the same reaction Mike had when he heard it.
Yeah, bro. So I think there's probably just a bit of bad habits having to be broken, and you bring in the new good habits. So it probably for Mike is less than desirable saying like, okay, like I'm having to reteach you guys more than I would want to, but it probably just comes with the territory of being the coach of the Kings at this point.
Yeah, it definitely says something about, I don't know what it says, but it says something about the guys that they do have on the roster and just where they are at defensively.
Right.
But credit to Mike for being willing to go and teach that. I hope in the offseason we get some funny stories from players about, like, you know, feeling like this is ridiculous that we're really doing this whatever grade closeout right now, you know? But I think it's clearly helped pay off. And I think the other thing has been the possession battle that they talk about like crazy. And that's not just field goal attempts, but the main three things really are free throws, offensive rebounds, second chance points, those being the same, and turnovers. And I think that Kings have always been good at limiting opposing offensive rebounds. They were first pre-All-Star break. I want to say they're top five on the year because they're also top five post-All-Star break. And turnovers, they can be a bit turnover prone. They float around right around middle of the league, but the offensive rebounds have gotten better recently too. Went from 17th pre-All-Star break, and they've been seventh post-All-Star break. So I think really making sure to win that possession battle, and there has been, with an increase in physicality, I think more foul calls against the Kings, at least like relative to the league, because again, all the free throw numbers are down in general. But the Kings are giving up a decent amount of free throw attempts, and you know, there's progress enough in what I feel like, and I'm curious what you think are new ways that I'm kind of encouraged about this moving forward, because it does feel new to me. This doesn't feel like something we've seen a little bit before maybe, and then it's just like disappeared over and over, you know?
I think it is just something that could be replicated for the last 10 games and then wherever they end up, whether it's play-in, playoff, and the postseason basically. So that coupled with, again, obviously outside of last night, I thought that they had been really good in third quarter defense. If we're not counting last night's domination, whatever you want to call it, on the Mavericks end, they only gave up 22.8, basically 23 points in that third quarter. And if we go back to the back-to-back they had where they beat the Bucks and Lakers, De'Aaron was talking about the benefits that come with being a solid third quarter team defensively, because whatever happened in that first quarter, you can either build on a lead that you already have or kind of get back in the game if you're down. So I would like to see, again, them continuing to get the same whistle they have that's allowed them to be as physical as they have over the last few games and get back into the flow of taking the third quarter serious on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I guess we keep saying without the – aside from the Dallas game or last night's just total whooping, and I guess we could just talk about that. It was Sacramento's fifth game in seven nights, and not making an excuse, I do think that played a part. Like, I think it looked like the fifth game in seven nights. Yeah. Now, Dallas is also playing a back-to-back, and it's a road back-to-back for them compared to a home back-to-back for the Kings. Like Mike Brown pointed out post-game that Dallas has 18 fast break points and the Kings have five. And he said exactly what I just said about back-to-backs and that's unacceptable. Obviously, the three-point shot is ridiculous. Dallas made 22 of their 39 threes. It's their highest three-point percentage of the year. I think they actually had a game where they made a few more, but not quite as efficient. I mean, what do you make of this one? This was probably biggest game of the year, to at least up to this point.
It seemed just kind of a game they, from the jump, were out of sorts. And the score didn't really reflect that until we got to the third quarter. They were only down five at halftime. But feels like it's not often you see the Kings only have 53 points in any half, let alone the first. So it was almost just like Luka and Kyrie were taking turns. Like, obviously, I doubt they discussed this, but it was like, Luka said, all right, bro, I got us in the first half, and Kyrie is on you in the second. And coach talked about it post-game, but the fact that they had to blitz Luka early on got other guys in the rhythm. One of the main, quote-unquote, others, I guess you could say, was Tim Hardaway Jr., who seemed to be comfortable early on. He got an and-one, I think two and-ones, like early on in the game. And then three balls started falling for him, and it was just more of the same in the second half when the Kings had to run doubles at Kyrie because he was going off. So that, coupled with the fact that the Kings just were turning the ball over, taking tougher shots, and it allowed the Mavs to kind of get out and run to have those transition points. And I think the Kings ended up with eight, but a decent amount of those came during like the Mason and Kobe and Jalen Slauson minutes. So like those count, but it wasn't in a competitive sense there.
Yeah, trying to avoid the word garbage time there.
100% dancing around.
Yeah. We need a better word because Mike Brown absolutely values those minutes for sure.
Yeah.
I think that you were on point. There's also those 14 turnovers you mentioned from the Kings, leads to 21 Dallas points. De'Aaron acknowledged that post game, and he also pointed out that, you know, even you subtract literally all those points, we still lose this game.
Yeah.
But I think that was an aspect. And surprisingly, in a game where Dallas puts up 132 in regulation, Mike Brown seemed more disappointed with their offense than their defense. And partially because he said that he felt like their offense bled into their defense, mm-hmm. and that was definitely an aspect of it. And, you know, I mean, the Luka Kyrie, your half, my half, is kind of just going to happen, I guess. Yeah. But it doesn't need to be that efficient where, you know, Luka goes 10 of 18, Kyrie's 10 of 19. I don't think life was made very difficult on them. And, like, Luka specifically, this dude's limping around out there. Like, visually, you can tell he's hurt. And they start him on Keegan. And it's like, Keegan, you just need to be more aggressive, dude. I don't feel like they were making Luka work on defense enough throughout the course of this game. But I don't know. How do you make life harder on those guys?
I think that what you just said is a big part of it, bro. Like, if you're actively making guys work when they have to defend you and exert energy on the defensive side of the ball, they're probably, especially on the second night of a back-to-back when you were just in Utah the night before last night, there's probably going to be some sort of effect on their legs. They're not going to be as spry, as Mark Jones likes to say a lot of times about De'Aaron. They're not going to have that extra bounce offensively if you're really making them work on defense. And again, I mean, you mentioned Keegan, who Luka was guarding for, I want to say, the majority of the first half. 11 shots is cool. That's like literally the third most on the team behind Malik and De'Aaron, but there could always be room for more. And I think Mike is encouraging Keegan to be as aggressive as possible. We've heard it countless times now, but if they're able to make guys work and taking shots that are comfortable for them, that probably is going to have some type of impact on how those guys play offensively.
Yeah, I would think the same. And maybe that's part of why Mike Brown is saying their offense was – now, he didn't say they played perfectly defensively or anything like that, but he was definitely more focused on the offense. And I think that was actually also the case in the loss that they had against the Wizards. You know, I think it's interesting their two most recent losses, and the Wizards loss is a bad one, right? That's not a team you're supposed to lose against. They're the new Pistons, I guess, this season, which is ironic after that whole Kuzma tweet earlier in the year, just don't be that team. But Kuzma had a big game in that one. Rashawn Holmes did really well on the glass in the first half. And Mike Brown, you know, talked about their ability to not only not hit threes, but kind of pass up good looks. And, you know, they held Washington to 109. I don't know if held, I guess, is the right word there. It's really that first quarter, right, where the Washington has 35. But after that, 21, 28, 25. Like, it's just that first quarter, really. But I do think that I'm encouraged by the fact that it's different in these two games. Again, I know Dallas scored 132. But in the two most recent losses, it's been that our offense didn't cut it. Even look at the New York game. They lost 98-91. Mm-hmm. You know, the last, you could go back three games, really. I mean, maybe the Houston one, 112-104. That was a defensive game, you know? So I think that they have kind of gotten their defense figured out a little bit, and that does encourage me. But there's a tight standing race right now. After losing that one to Dallas, the Kings are now one game behind them and lead the tiebreaker 2-1, for what it's worth. But how we're looking in the Western Conference is, top three, obviously Denver, OKC, Minnesota. That's going to be your top three in whatever order, still TBD. But then you really got four to 10, I guess, the Clippers, and half a game behind them is New Orleans in five.
Yep.
And if you go a game and a half behind the Clippers in six is Dallas, 2.5 is the 7-8 with Sacramento and Phoenix. And then you got, dude, I'm not good at math here.
I'm with you.
7-4.5 is the Lakers. Lakers are 4.5 behind the Clippers in the 9 seed. And then 5-6.5 would be the Warriors in the 10 seed. So really, for the Kings' perspective, they are 2.5 games behind the 4 seed, 2 games behind the 5, and really you're looking at that 6. I mean, you're trying to get above 6. Mm-hmm. You're one game behind Dallas, and you get a rematch with them with a chance to win the season series officially on Friday. You also got Phoenix kind of barking or nipping at the heels a little bit here, and the Kings still have games against New Orleans and Phoenix, by the way, this year, and I believe the Clippers, which is wild. And we're talking about this Dallas game coming up on Friday, so a lot of really impactful ones as the season closes. I think there's an OKC one in there as well. Yeah. But before looking at, I guess, standings as a whole, but just to paint the picture of how important every single one of these games is, what do you look at as needs to be better in this matchup on Friday that has really big implications?
I think the defense obviously goes without saying, but just honestly more of a sense of urgency offensively. And I don't think there's a ton of nights we'll see De'Aaron have 18 points on 18 shots, but that's not ideal. Second most shots came from Malik. So more than anything, I really want Domas to step up. And obviously he's been, I'd say, like the model of consistency throughout the season. We know what he does with double doubles, triple doubles. But if you force the defense to collapse and guard you more, and I'm saying that while also understanding Daniel Gafford is pretty solid defensively. And when it's not him, Derek Lively is, aside from Wimby, probably as good as it gets defensively as a rookie. So a shout out to Chet too. Can't slight Chet there, but I think Domas getting it going offensively can make life easier for all of his teammates. And 10 shots isn't going to cut it. I would like to see Domas have at least like 15 to 17 shots. And for him to find a way to just be more aggressive, there were times where the ball was kicked out to him and usually he hesitates on threes. I mean, we know that's not his strong suit, but like, even if you knock one of those down, you pull either Gafford or Lively away from the paint a little bit, it might be easier to go around and kick to somebody else or get to a dunk. So I would definitely want to see more from Domas Friday.
Yeah, the first time these teams matched up, Domas had 32, 13, and 6 on 15 shots, by the way, 6 of 10. I believe in this one, Lively ended up getting in foul trouble. The next game they have in January, Domas has 17, 11, and 4. There's also 6 turnovers in here, but that's on 7 of 10. I will say I think this Dallas team looks very different than they did before. You know, the trades that they made at the deadline have worked pretty well. They give them more. I mean, you look at this team compared to last year, and I saw a bunch of Dallas fans yesterday in garbage time when it's JaVale McGee versus Dwight Powell. And they're like, this was our center rotation last year. You know, and now they're working with Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford, two guys that I think are really, really good. Like you mentioned, PJ Washington had a big game in a big stint. You know, I think he hit 3 of 3 from deep in the first quarter. And just that little stuff does so much, because the way that they were willing to live with other guys, anybody but Kyrie or Luka, killing them at a certain point. And those guys still kind of got theirs to an extent. But other guys, you mentioned Tim Hardaway, but there's those PJ Washington. I think Derek Jones Jr. coming back has been big for them. He gives them a lot of length, almost a like lesser. I hesitate saying that because I feel bad. But
here, let's see. Like
Jaden McDaniels. You know, you get that length, and definitely there's significant differences. You know what I mean? But having that lengthy guy to put on a guard like De'Aaron, I think helps.
That comparison, by the way. That's not, appreciate you. Not ass, bro.
I felt bad about, you know, I almost went discount. I was like, you know, discount's
discount,
tough.
Great discount, great value.
Tough. Yeah, you know. But they're a good defensive team. Like Dante Exum has kind of reinvented himself throughout the course of this year. And so I do think that they are a good defensive team, but the turnovers definitely need to be cleaned up for Sacramento. Spray threes is a buzzword this year, and it was definitely a buzzword last night in post game. They got to get back to that. I think it was 5 of 10 on spray threes in the first half, and then 1 of 4.
Yep.
They only had 4 attempts. I know that in the second half, and 3 of them came in a lineup that I believe had neither of De'Aaron or Domas out there. So take that for what it's worth. But I do think they need to kind of get back to that a little bit more. And something interesting they did that I honestly didn't notice in live time until I kind of watched back some clips is they started the game with Domas on PJ Washington, actually, instead of Gafford. And I think it was to try and just get ahead of, okay, they're going to run pick and roll with their big.
Right.
We got Harrison on him, and let's just try to do that so we can switch. Dallas picked up on that pretty quick. Luka and Kyrie probably on the floor, or maybe Jason Kidd, another all-time, which I definitely have a jersey back here, all-time man, point guard picked up on that. It's the red Nets one, actually.
I'm not gonna lie. Hard, bro.
It's
that's
under the Giants hat, but
okay.
Picked up on it pretty quick and just started having PJ Washington screen. Yeah. And Domas is not going to do great in a pick and roll defensively against either of those two guys, or Keegan Murray is not going to do well against, like, Luka Doncic is not the type of guy for him. What have you made? Because this is now two games in a row. There has been a lot of positive progress for Keegan this season. Mm-hmm. But Maxey was looking for him in switches, which Maxey's is maybe the guy that comes close to Fox in terms of speed, right? Mm-hmm. And then Luka, like, I mean, he had no answer for Luka. And nobody has an answer, but it didn't look like he was working very hard.
I think they get – they being Tyrese and Luka, they get to what they want to do in different ways, but both of those aren't necessarily the strongest of defensive abilities for Keegan yet. And Maxey is, he's also, for his age, he's really good at kind of like knowing how to get his whistle. So I remember vividly there was a time where he drove past Keegan to the right, kind of threw his shoulder into Keegan. And it looked like Keegan was pretty straight up and down. And Keegan got a block, but before he got the block, there was a whistle for Tyrese, and he's at the free throw line now. And that kind of goes against what we were saying in the theme of the refs letting them play and having it be more kind of a playoff feel. But that's one area I think, like, De'Aaron has helped Keegan a lot as far as – being able to guard smaller, quicker guys. But as you mentioned, there's only a handful of guys who are as quick, if not quicker, than Tyrese. So advantage Tyrese there. And when it comes to Luka, he's just more slower, a little bit more thought out, kind of methodical a little bit about how he goes about it. And I don't know. I can't really say that's like on Keegan as much. Like you said, like no one can guard Luka. But he just, time and time again, got to a step back, was either – Luka's a really, like, big guy, too. And I think you see it a little bit on TV, but seeing him in person, it's like he's a good 6'7", I would say, and don't know how much, but I know he outweighs Keegan.
Yeah,
so once he has Keegan on his hip or he's backing Keegan down, it's like Keegan is at Luka's will at that point. So – I don't want to overreact to it, but those are two guys who are like top of the league as far as being elite offensively.
Yeah, they definitely are. It's interesting because, like, I feel like he's done well against like Book and Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. But those like Maxey and Luka do seem like the two almost examples of like the, I think the quicker point guards can be tough, which is interesting because like he's done fine on, he's had his moments on Steph. You wrote about it, about how that was something that kind of unlocked his confidence there. Maxey's a different level of fast. Like, I think there's genuinely a conversation if he might be quicker than De'Aaron. I think typically the dude with less experience is going to show off the quickness more.
Yeah.
So it's hard to not kind of lean it towards them. Like, it was the same thing when De'Aaron came in and Russ was still around. Like, it's the same sort of conversation in my mind. But then the size you mentioned with Luka is a tough one too, but it does. It's just something I notice. Like when we're talking about Keegan being maybe the best defender out there, and Maxey's like, "No, give me that guy." I'm like, "God, this is interesting." They did it to a couple different players. Is all. It's not just Keegan.
Yeah, and I think like you mentioned, I definitely want to give the Mavericks front office credit for what they did before the deadline, because I believe, like you said, the team that the Kings saw wasn't the same as what they saw last night. So Keegan was guarding Luka before he had the option of kicking it to PJ Washington, before he had a lob threat of Daniel Gafford. Obviously, Derek Lively is a younger version of that, but Luka also just had more weapons at his disposal last night than he did the first time Keegan matched up with him, and I thought Keegan did pretty well earlier on, but it's kind of just what happens when you have more and better weapons around you.
Yeah, it changes fast, and you know, it could be a team that, I don't know that a team with pretty much the same record as you is something you want to model yourself after, I guess, but
yeah,
like this is sort of the upgrades that we're looking for the Kings, right? And it's still taking, I think they still need that next big guy as well. Mm-hmm. Not size, but in caliber of player. But like I guess I just got really caught up in some of the stuff about like the Mavericks were starting. Again, JaVale McGee and Dwight Powell, their center rotation last year. Spencer Dinwiddie and Frank Ntilikina are part of their guard rotation. And like they really had a glow up, man. They look a lot better this season, and it's just changing some of those sort of tertiary pieces. But where's your confidence level at going into, or the one thing I'll add as well is that I think that Dallas did a couple things that the Kings just weren't ready for in the way that it's not how they typically play, having the big super high up on Domas.
Yeah,
where, you know, it's the typical thing that was like talked about with Draymond years ago of, I know he's not going to shoot that, but I'm not just going to sit there and let him read the floor. Mm-hmm. And I think that Dallas did that well, and they're taking away the DHOs. And Mike Brown said pretty straight up post game that like Domas needs to go past those guys sometimes. Can you think of a time that Domantas Sabonis faked a dribble handoff this year?
Damn. Probably
not wild, but you know, you've seen Draymond do it.
That would be obviously those two, the history there makes this kind of funny and I guess ironic, if you will, but Draymond would be a great person for Domas to study a little bit more because Draymond is involved in countless DHOs, but there's times where he knows he's not going to, he may have handed the ball off like 5 times in a row. And he's like, okay, on the 6th time, regardless of what the read is, I'm going by and I'm getting a dunk. And I think Domas can do that probably pretty often.
He should be able to do it better. Like, it's a read, obviously. But I think it gets to the point where it's like just the threat of that keeps defenses honest. You know, it keeps that big on you. And so, you know, I get that teams are packing the paint against him. That's very much clearly the defensive game plan against this team. And I am at the point where I'm a little worried where, you know, Miami, Houston, Dallas, these teams have all found success with the same formula, packing the paint against the Kings. Mm-hmm. It's another game where we hear they got too deep before they swung out and didn't get enough spray threes. And Mike Brown mentioned, you know, kind of feels like some guys, and paraphrasing here, are, it's not chasing assists, but not like, I think it's trying to make the skip pass instead of just making the next one and trust that that guy will eventually get it to the correct player, you know, being okay with the hockey assist, and something he said that he felt like Dallas did better than Sacramento. And I think that's something that, you know, when De'Aaron has 3 assists, Malik has, or turnovers, De'Aaron 3 turnovers, Malik 3 turnovers, Domas 4 turnovers, it's a hard game to win. And I think those are the 3 guys that you look at when it comes to some of that playmaking stuff. But where's your level of confidence or concern, I guess, going into this next game Friday?
I think the amount of rest that the Kings are going to have is going to be a huge benefit. I think, obviously, you can't put everything that happened on the second night of a back-to-back because the Mavericks had a back-to-back where they traveled however many miles. So can't really put too much stock in that, but I think just having some time to regroup. I think, as you mentioned, there was like 5 games in 7 nights, something like that, for the Kings. And I just, it's hard for me to imagine De'Aaron going 6 of 18 again. And Malik has also been kind of in a bit of a slump, if you will. And I just think the offense is going to be done like wonders by just being able to sit out and have a little bit of just rest, regroup time. And eventually I see some of the shots going down that weren't last night. I think they'll be sharper as far as not turning the ball over, making some of the underhand lazy passes that they were making that turned into Mavericks points on the other end. And I would be pretty surprised if they allowed Luka and Kyrie to get as comfortable as they did last night. So all things considered, I'm expecting a close game. Not sure it'll work out in the Kings' favor, but I do think over these next 3 home games that the Kings have against I want to say Mavericks, Jazz, and then I think Clippers.
Yeah, you got that down.
Yeah, there need to be two wins out of the three. Because at that point, you're heading on the road to play Knicks. It's like the East Coast road trip. You're playing Knicks. Brooklyn could be a scare, possibly. But you're also playing the Celtics. So they need to take advantage of at least two of the three next home games.
Yeah, and one of them just kind of has to be this Dallas game, I feel like. I mean, it really makes life harder for you to get the sixth seed. But I do feel like there's a... It is only 10 games left, but I feel like there's an overreaction that still goes on to some of these games. Like if Kings lose to Dallas, it's not, there's no chance they ever get the sixth seed now, you know? I mean, it would be tough. They'd be two games behind it.
Yeah.
But that's not insurmountable in 10 games. You can have a 6 or a 7-3 record compared to some other team going 5-5, you know? Mm-hmm. And well, I guess it'd have to be 2.5. So you'd have to be 3 games. So it does make it actually, you know, as I talk myself out of my own take here.
Nah, it gets a little nasty at that
point. It does get a little tough. So I think this Dallas game has to be big, but I'm really not freaking out about the first loss and just very much in wait and see how they respond. And I think it's a luxury that they get to play them again here because you could wipe this taste out of your mouth sort of thing. But interested to see some of the adjustments they make because this is a little bit of a playoff feel. You know, they don't practice today because of the whole 5 games and 7 nights that went on prior to this, like they typically would if it was a postseason. So it's not like they're trying to replicate it exactly, but you do get an opportunity to watch the film back from that game. How are you going to come into it and make your adjustments? And I think there are some notable scheme things to kind of keep tabs on, but will be interesting. One of the bigger games of the year for sure. De'Aaron's comments post game. Anybody on the YouTube side might have saw you. I saw you teeing it up for half a sec because I didn't pull the audio before, so I'm doing it a little differently. I'm pretty sure the audio is going to work here, but yeah, let's just get to De'Aaron's comments post game about some of the stuff that earlier in the year he wasn't talking to media after losses for a stretch there, and it started with it not happening after, actually, coincidentally, the loss that tied the worst loss of the season when it comes to point differential in New Orleans. I want to say that he spoke after that one, but it was the game after against Toronto or something along those lines.
I think it started with the
media for a little longer. And so that's, I guess, the context of where Jason Anderson was coming from when he asked this question. But this is kind of what De'Aaron had to say.
For quite a while now, you've come out and you know, addressed like some of your bigger and you know, maybe more difficult losses. Is this like something you're kind of making a point of doing for some reason in turn, you know, just leading this team and kind of showing that accountability? And
as far as talking to y'all?
Yeah, just, you know.
I don't get shit out of that. Okay. I don't get nothing out of that. They ask me, I do it.
But for the team, so it really doesn't mean anything in terms
of they don't give a fuck if I come up here and talk. I tell you that. But no, I mean, Michael or Shannon asked me, I do it.
Okay. Well, they're
good. I get no joy in this after a win or a loss. My team doesn't care if I come up here in a blowout win or a blowout loss. So
sorry I brought it up.
I mean, it is what it is.
I get no joy in this is so funny, actually. I mean, it's for what it's worth. Michael Shannon, our media relations, those are the people that go out and are asking players to come out and talk to us. I don't know, man. What do you make? This is very on brand for De'Aaron, for what it's worth. This is about right. But I don't know. What are you thinking of when we're both in the room when this happens? But what's on your mind?
A couple of things right off the bat that were hilarious to me, watching it back now and in the moment. One, just looking at De'Aaron's face as Jason was asking the question, like you knew he was just in his head, like getting ready to give us a classic. Two, Jason doubling back with a sorry, man, sorry I asked.
Yeah.
Also hilarious. But bro, I think De'Aaron is probably just a bit jaded with the whole process of like talking to media. This is only the second season where he's been in the position where there are expectations, and if you don't meet those expectations, you're more or less required to speak on why you didn't. And so I think he's still kind of in the process of getting comfortable and maybe even trying to want to talk to us after games, because it's all probably a bit new for him. And I think he's just kind of like, bro, like, I really don't care at this point. And on one hand, like, depending on how you view us as far as the quote unquote media, like, sometimes we are a mouthpiece for the fans, and we get the information that they want. So if you remove us from it and kind of look at it as like, this is an opportunity to talk to fans, which he also, like he said, might not really give a shit about, like, not the fans that he doesn't give a shit about, but like talking to them after losses. I mean,
yeah,
it could be a different way for him to look at it instead of just like, okay, these are the same 10 to 12 faces I see after every loss, kind of asking me like similar questions. I think, yeah, bro, he's probably just jaded with the process and not really feeling like he owes us much of anything, which I don't blame him for.
No, I don't either. I think this is very, like I said, on brand, classic De'Aaron. I do think that, like you said, the media, a lot of times that there's questions that get asked that are very repetitive, and they're given the same cookie cutter 2K answers, just trying to get a little more team chemistry and fans. Like, it's, you know, and I get why that would be frustrating. And De'Aaron's always, there was a game maybe not long after I started covering the team, like 3 years ago, maybe Tyrese's rookie year, and they got totally destroyed. And De'Aaron comes out like durag on, hood on. You could tell he don't want to be there.
Right.
And I forget what the question was, but just remember him saying like, it's not like we're in the playoffs or anything. Like, okay. you know, so sometimes you just get lines from De'Aaron a little bit here. And I think that that's fine. I don't think it is interesting to me. Well, first of all, what you said, though, like sometimes we're a mouthpiece for the fan base in a way. And I think that's super accurate. There's been times I've asked questions just because I know the fan base is curious about this. And so I know other media members have done the same thing, you know? So there's definitely an aspect of that. But I think the question of like the leadership, right, when it comes to as a teammate or as the leader of the team, quote unquote, that part is interesting to me. Like the, you know, De'Aaron could have chosen to give the cookie cutter PR response here, right? Yeah. I think that Jason meant it as a compliment, as a, hey, you've come out here pretty much after every bad loss now, ever since there was that thing earlier in the year. And, you know, De'Aaron could have very easily been like, yeah, you know, I'm just trying to, I guess I can't think of something off the spot. He's a lot more well-trained than me, you know, but he could have easily been like, you know, some little spiel about leadership and just the way that he needs to be better and we all need to be better, you know? But I appreciate the honesty, but I do think there's an interesting aspect of, you know, earlier in the year when De'Aaron's not going out there, which again was not his fault. He did not get asked to do it and it became a whole thing. It's not like he was turning it down, but then when Keon's out there answering questions, when this is at the time where he's hardly playing, it's like, well, I think that that guy could feel a type of way. Not to speak for Keon, I have no clue, but that's the one where I'm like, I don't know. I think your teammates could appreciate you going out there after media, but he would know better than me.
Yeah, I think they're, by the looks of it, as much as we can kind of pick up from being around them, they seem like a really close-knit group. But yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of just De'Aaron's personality. I don't think he's like the loud rah-rah guy in the locker room, like, hey, we need to do this, we need to do that. Like, he just seems like a pretty reserved person, whether he's hooping or not, whether he's winning or losing. Like, he just seems like a really reserved person, which I think is why Malik is such a big part of this team, because Domas is kind of also the same way. Like, there's times where we see Domas kind of giving guys instruction on the court, but neither De'Aaron nor Domas is a really just like outward, like demonstrative with their emotions, like outspoken kind of guy. And I think genuinely that is why Malik is such a valuable piece to this team, because he's like, nah, if I see some bullshit going on, like I'm gonna call it out in the moment. And that could be why De'Aaron has that kind of like nonchalant, like, bro, I really don't care type of attitude.
Yeah. And I, for what it's worth, don't get the impression that he has that in game. Like you can see him get fired up.
Yeah. He definitely cares. Like it's just the way he expresses it.
For sure. And specifically to media.
Yes.
You know, like this is just part of the job obligation to him. At least that's what it seems like, you know, and I have no issue with that. You mentioned, I think you're also on point with the Malik personality thing, not to hate, but last three games, this is why Malik is still a like six-man candidate. And when somebody asked me earlier in the year, what does Zach LaVine do that Malik Monk doesn't? It's consistency.
Yeah.
And this is three games in a row now where that Orlando game, 0 of 11 from the field. And for what it's worth, I think that Orlando has a lot of money this offseason, and at least their fan base and media members seem pretty interested in Malik Monk.
Yeah.
More money than Sacramento can offer. He played pretty well in that Toronto game, but I do think there's a little bit of a trend. Toronto's another team that has money, is why I mentioned that, and is known to be interested in him. They wanted Malik in any conversation that was going to go on in any Pascal Siakam deal. This, at the time of this deadline, there's the Philly game. Philly's another team that's mentioned as has money.
Yeah.
I feel like he hasn't played well against Charlotte earlier in the year.
Where are you going?
You know, I think that there's maybe there's a good Lakers game, but sometimes let's see these Lakers games. There's an 8-6. There is a 26-8. There's also a 3-5. Sometimes it feels like he's doing a little too much, you know? And clearly that's where I was going here. But in general, there are some inconsistencies, but I have started to, it's just something I'm going to keep tabs on. I'm not like locking in, you know, Andrew Wiggins level of Andrew Wiggins is a different guy when he plays against his old teams in a good way. Right. You know, I'm not locking in because I think there's enough sample size with Wiggins, you know, is what I'm going with. But Malik is, I'm just going to keep tabs on this a little bit. Sometimes I feel like you're doing a little bit too much, my guy.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it in the moment, but as you obviously go back through like game logs and box scores, he's could be pressing a little bit.
Just a little. And, you know, the inconsistencies just hurt is all. He's third most important guy on this team probably throughout the course of this year, maybe fourth with Keegan in there too. So more so mean it as he's very capable of high caliber production, and the Kings rely on him to do that. So it's tough to survive some of these bad nights sometimes when you're not getting it from other players, because Keegan hasn't been stepping up very much recently as well. You'll get little bursts from Keegan. Yeah. And so that's kind of been the reality of it. But do you want to do a pulse performer? Do you have one?
You know, I do, bro.
Okay. I think we might need to share because there might only be one. Now, maybe I'm crazy for that. I think I am crazy for that. Here, okay, we'll let you go first. We'll let you go first.
You Pulse know, performer. I'm hashtag trusting my work. I'm rocking with Damian Mitchell. I think he's just been more. Oh, hold on. You want to run it back?
No, it's okay. It's okay. We got it in there.
Okay.
In there. And I'm a little like, yeah, for the behind the scenes, I think that like when the audio's playing, it messes up the vocals, but right. I'm still figuring it out.
Nah, you're going crazy on the soundboard, no question. But yeah, Davion, he just seems to be like possibly in one of the best shooting rhythms he's had this season. And when he's knocking threes down and kind of able to just stretch the floor a little bit, I think that is huge for the Kings. Because he's another person who, like, obviously we know what he's going to do defensively. He's one of the best perimeter defenders the Kings have. I want to say against the Sixers, I was like, I shouldn't be because we've been around these guys, or I've been around these guys for the last 2 years. But his screen navigation is ridiculous. Like, just being able to fight over screens. He drew two moving screens in that Philly game, and it happened in, like, the span of 2 to 3 minutes. So, obviously, we know what he does defensively, and he's willing to be as aggressive as he has been on the offensive end. He's a huge staple in this team.
And he's getting him up. Like, there's a confidence that seems to be, like, growing at least a little bit, you know? And Mike Brown mentioned that. Mike Brown said that in the short time they've been around him, he's gotten a lot better as a three-point shooter. He's 49% on corner threes this year. And that's only 17 of 35.
Yeah.
I feel real good about the corners. Like, yesterday, when he hit one above the break, was when I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Since January, the start of – since in 2024, right, 38 games, 40.5% from three for Davion.
Hooping.
1.9 a game. And that's also 51% from the field. Like I mentioned, the 49% on corner threes on the year. He's 78% at the rim. And again, that's only 45 attempts. He's 35 of 45. I feel like that's one of the things where you wanted some improvement. And yeah. I think his aggressiveness offensively can be really big for this team. Like, paint touches were something they just did not get anywhere close to enough in that game against Dallas. And Davion's a guy that can do that. Now, it's a little tough when we talk about teams collapsing and you're 6 foot and going in there and have to rise up and try to make a read. That makes things a little bit more difficult for sure. But he has definitely some good capabilities. And there's that 18-point game that he had against Philly with the defense. Like you mentioned, 3 of 4 from deep. He's getting shots up, you know? And like in that time of January, there's a 5-attempt game. There's another one in here. There's a couple 4 attempts and 3 attempts. And honestly, that just was not happening very much earlier in the season. I guess very, very beginning of the year for a little bit. But then after that, there was a large majority where it felt like it really wasn't. So I think he kind of has to be one of them. And I guess the other.
Who you got?
I mean, I got to go my guy. You know, going with Keon Ellis. He's getting the starts here now. And since he has been, he is averaging 8 points on 43.8% from the field. This is only 9 games, nowhere near the 30 whatever that we're talking for Davion. But 43.8% from the field, 54.9% from three. There's a couple in here, though. That Orlando game, like I talked about, he hits a step back three, or foot on the line, ends up being a two.
Big shot.
Huge shot. And I didn't love the shot. I don't think that I would, if you're giving me a bunch of options of what shot do they get on that possession, it's probably very last. I'm not going to lie. But to be confident, and he never looks he does sometimes look uncomfortable, but for the most part, he looks pretty poised out there. He doesn't look rushed. There's times he looks confused, you know, but he doesn't look rushed. And I think the confusion is just natural, you know, the way that he's having very typical rookie mistakes. And I know he's a second year guy, but this is first year getting significant minutes in the NBA. You think to the Jalen Brunson, you know, looking over for the screen and next thing you know, Brunson's gone. Like, that's not Keon being bad. That's a rookie mistake. Or there's like 2-3 plays yesterday. Kyrie kind of got him.
Yeah.
You know, but it's Kyrie and he's out there working. So I think it's typical rookie stuff, but some of the offensive stuff has stood out to me a little bit here. You know, there's some interesting assist numbers in here as well. In that game against Orlando, 19 points or 6 assists as well. And obviously we know what he does defensively, but I think he's going to be my post performer, and he's been balling out, and he's a very cool story too. It's interesting. Yeah. He told me not long after he got drafted that I assumed that he was a guy that always played defense. I don't know if I've said this before, cause he just looks so instinctual. And I asked him, like, when did you start to be a defense player? And he's like, honestly, like, not really till I got to Alabama. It's like, what? This is like 3 years ago. It looks like talking about like 4 years ago, you know, when he was at, I think it's Florida Southwestern, he was their leading scorer and he was just out there getting buckets. And then he transfers to Alabama after 2 years at JUCO and realizes the only way I'm going to get on the floor is by playing defense. And he decides to lock in and all of a sudden is a ridiculous defender. By the way, that team also had Herb Jones, and they would just be giving people hell, bro.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy.
I saw somebody recently was talking about how he was like on scout team and he had to – did you see that?
No.
So somebody tweeted who I guess was like on scout team for Alabama.
Oh, yes.
Herb and Keon were both there, and he was talking about how his practices were just tough.
Yeah,
but
they've got
to
be.
Keon, to your point too, like one of the things I really love about his game is like he never gets outside of himself. And to the point about like sometimes maybe looking confused, but not like he's not meant to be out there. I think that is to his credit because he's like, I know what my strengths are. I know what my weaknesses are, and I'm not going to do anything to play into my weaknesses. So he just is like, for his age and level of experience in the NBA, I think he has a really good grip on like knowing what he does and does not do well.
I think so too. I do have, I know I just shouted him out, but I do have some worries. You know, I think that while I'm really encouraged, I think he's a great story. I think he could be an interesting guy long-term, like, you know, super, super optimistic. Alex Caruso is an undrafted guy and an extremely impactful defender. You know, like Keon is a ridiculously disruptive defender. I think that's real. And he's a legit borderline 40% three-point shooter. We saw it at Alabama. We saw it in the G League. Now we're seeing it in the NBA. And he's confident. Like, guys go under on screens on dribble handoff. He's going to stop and pull it. Right. And actually in that Washington game where they didn't get enough shots up or passed up shots, as Mike Brown said, Keon was one of those guys that passed up a few too many shots. And then what does he do? He comes out in the Orlando game and does what he does in that one. So I'm encouraged. I like it long-term. I think if coming into the year, we were like Keon Ellis, the guy that's currently on a two-way is going to be starting coming into the playoffs.
Yeah.
You'd be kind of worried. And I get that there's been a lot that's gone on since then. I'm still a little worried. The whole, you know, just swing to the next guy for De'Aaron, Domas, Malik, like we talked about, and let them make the play. I think there's a chance that, you know, maybe there's not that level of trust in Keon, and that's why you're trying to skip that step in the process, you know? And I think that that's interesting. Like, he has to make very, very quick decisions. They talk about playing in 0.5 offense, like make a decision in half a second.
Yeah,
because you want to maintain the advantage that those other guys created. And, you know, still just a learning process is all. And I think offensively, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets treated, because you go up against Minnesota. Now, Keon can shoot, but are they going to do what Milwaukee did against Boston and just put your big on that guy and say, Grant Williams, Keon Ellis, I don't care if you shoot 15 threes this game. You know, and now is Rudy Gobert going to get to just, you know, do whatever he wants in the paint? So I'm interested to see how that goes in the postseason. But there's a chance that he just looks poised and good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little just hesitant and curious more than willing to pick a side here, I guess.
I think it's for good reason. He's, again, I guess you almost could say this is like his rookie season since he didn't play a ton last year. And with rookie seasons come rookie mistakes. So I think these next 10 games are probably going to be pretty important for him now that he's comfortably, I would say, in that starting two spot. He's at this point, each game seems like he's getting more and more comfortable offensively. And yeah, I'm curious to see how it goes over these last 10 for him, because he could, I think, build some offensive momentum heading into the play-in, playoffs, postseason.
Yeah, and his contract's going to be pretty solid. I think they got 2 years remaining after this one of where he's going to be right around the $2 million mark. And if he's giving you role player production, you know, that's pretty solid. It reminds me of kind of Lu Dort's deal a little bit, where I think he signed a four-year small annual deal not too long after being undrafted. But, yeah, interested to see kind of how it goes moving forward. You got anything else before we move to OT?
Alex Lynn, he was, I had to give it to Davion for post performer, but I just like the way Alex Lynn brings a different kind of feel to the game. Like, I'm not necessarily trusting him in pick and roll situations in drop coverage and whatnot, but he's more of a rim protector than Domas. I think opposing teams are aware of it. And he's not going to give you like 17 to 20 minutes a night. At best, he might get 15 out there if Domas is in foul trouble. But there's just constant effort. He's working his ass off out there. And I think he's constantly just providing positive minutes. So shouts out, tip my cap to Alex Lynn for sure.
Yeah, I think he's had some really loud blocks recently. For sure.
Bro, he's sending shit. So yeah. I gotta respect it.
He definitely is. And he's efficient. You know, I think that he's definitely locked into the backup center spot. I think if Trey Lyles becomes healthy, that's maybe the other direction you could look certain games, or maybe Sasha Vezenkov becomes that guy who I'm expecting to play against Dallas, but still very TBD. You know, it's been I don't know how long. I want to say
it's been
a little over a week since he's participated in his first practice as a full participant. So now those 5 games and 7 nights, I mean, there was 2 back-to-backs in there. So less practices, less shoot-arounds as well for him to kind of get reps in. And grade 3 ankle can be a little tricky to come back from, considering he also had another ankle injury earlier in the year, another one on that same ankle. So we'll see there, but Alex seems locked into that spot. I think the only shortcoming Alex has, or I guess like the primary, is just fouling. Yes. Like it seems like it's more often on moving screens than anything, actually, which is weird because Domas moves way more than he does.
100%, bro. I think that's probably just Domas being like the guy.
Yeah.
But I've noticed, like, I want to say last night he like hip checked somebody trying to like cut off the sideline or something like that. So it's just like typical big guy stuff. But he's like 1B, I guess, for post performing.
For sure. Yeah, he's definitely locked into that backup center spot. And yeah, weirdly, like, yeah, for some reason, watching like Lively and Gafford, really, they feel like Alex Len type of players. You know what I mean? Except more modern, if that makes sense. They move a little bit better, but Alex moves better than I think some people realize.
Yeah, he could be kind of limber out there sometimes.
Yeah, for a 7-footer, you know, as limber as a 7-footer gets, except Wemby, I guess. But all right, basketball conversation over. We are on to overtime. We get the hang of this. We get the hang of this.
Yeah, you've been in your bag, bro.
We're trying. So, can you guess where I'm going with this? It's super. There's something that happened recently. Not basketball related, obviously. Like some.
The Future Metro album.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Definitely the Future Metro album and the Kendrick diss, I guess. To apparently Cole and Drake, the fuck the big three. It's just Big Me.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh man, so I'm like a Cole fan, have been since I was a kid, I could almost say. And I think first off though, Drake got most of that smoke. I think that was like mainly directed toward Drake. But Kendrick, he'll like come out of hiding every like 3 to 4 years and do some some fire stuff like this. So when I first heard it, though, I was not expecting it to be on a Future song. I didn't realize like Kendrick was even featured on that song because they did like.
Why do people do that now? Why is that a thing that we just hide features?
It's kind of fire though, bro. Because I went into it not expecting Kendrick at all, and
it's true. Because if I look at it now, and I see a feature, I'm like, well, I'm just gonna skip straight to that one.
Yeah, you might go straight to that.
Yeah, and yeah.
So, it was crazy though. I saw somebody had like a video on Twitter just explaining all the double entendres and all the different things that Kendrick does. And it's like, he is the definition of an artist. Like, he's not just a rapper at all. I think he's someone who is extremely thought out in how he raps one, but also like disses people too. So it was a masterclass in putting some words together.
It definitely was. Like you said, I thought it was more towards Drake, but a little bit of, I guess, Cole in there just because he's on that first-person shooter song.
Yeah, Cole just kind of caught, like, the some strays a little bit just because he was a part of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I do think there's an aspect, like I was listening to this guy, like listen to, it's kind of like a reaction channel I used to listen to. And this was like, this is the type of moment you listen to a reaction channel. I'm not going to lie. Right. And he was just like, man, like everybody just sneak disses now. Like just say his name.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the most like cryptic, I guess it's not like everybody knew pretty quickly, you know, but then there's like all this old Drake stuff of like, oh, is that last song on like the What Would Pluto Do song on his last album? Is this actually a diss to Future?
Right.
You know, or like I saw, I don't know if you saw side by side of like For All the Dogs track list names.
Yes.
And the what did they name there? Whatever, I forget.
We don't trust
future
you.
Thank you. That we don't trust you. Yeah, and all the like play on words with that was super interesting.
Yeah, bro.
There's definitely something, and for I think it could be really good. It could be really fun. I've never been a Kendrick guy. The voices can be a little much for me. You know, he just messes with the voices. I love all three. I just it's been Cole for me for sure, and then Drake, and then Kendrick, but. Drake feels very different than these other two. You know what I mean? Like you said, the artist, the lyricist, like, and Drake is just like a hit maker.
Yeah.
You know, there's just differences.
I do think it's like, you know how people say like, it's good for basketball when the Knicks are good. Like, I think it's good for rap when there's beef sometimes.
I agree.
If we could get a little bit of back and forth and really, because this is like, it's been a little drawn out, bro. Like, we've been talking about the big three and who's the best out of the big three since like 2012, like 10-ish maybe. And it's like, all right, bro, y'all are like married with kids for the most part, minus Drake, but like, y'all might be having grandkids eventually. Like, let's just settle this shit for once and for all and see who really is the best out of y'all three.
I agree. And I do love Kendrick being like, nah, bro, it's just me. Like,
yeah.
And there's a chance, you know, of course, there's theories of like, is this just marketing? I do not care. If it is, first of all, it's smart. Yes, 100%. Like, everybody's not talking about it. You know, if I'm interested to see. Just please respond. You can't just let that sit. You have to respond. Yeah, Drake put up some Instagram posts, you know, saying that he's chilling or whatever.
Yeah, bro, we don't want no damn Instagram posts.
Out of here, bro.
And like, I think it's been a situation where Drake has like thrown like subtle shots and he'll say different stuff at, there was like a song he had, I forgot where he said, but he said like, he mentioned like, Mortal Man or like more something, he mentioned like one of Kendrick's song titles or like album titles, and it's like, bro, you've clearly been like trying to get at him different ways for a little bit now, so like you finally got what you wanted, let's see what you do with this opportunity.
I agree. The fact that it's on a Future and Metro song is crazy, by the way, and apparently like all the Future beef is like over, well, the theory is it's all over some girl. I'm like, bro, this is so weird. But then you start listening for it. But it's like anything, you know, if you look for it, you're going to find it sort of thing. But I'm like, I don't know, dude. Really over a girl? Y'all over a girl? What are we talking about?
I don't know. Those two seem like they have an abundance of options. I don't know why they would be tripping that hard over like.
I agree.
But yeah, man, it kind of sucks a little bit. I saw somebody say something about like along the lines of this being just all like a marketing ploy, like, oh, they're gonna like rekindle their friendship and announce like What a Time to Be Alive too. I wouldn't be mad at that, but
that'd be so corny, bro.
It would be extremely corny, but I'm like, I like them as a duo, and if this is all over what we think it's over, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree. I will say Metro went crazy with that beat specifically, but the whole album worth of beats, actually. Bro. Future could be a little repetitive. The song with Travis, Cinderella.
Yeah.
That song, I think that song is better than the Kendrick one. The Kendrick one will, like, you know, have a bigger impact, I guess. Travis one goes crazy.
There's a few, bro, like that. Cinderella, Everyday Hustle with Rick Ross was crazy. Mm-hmm. Claustrophobic. I had that.
Is that the Weekend one?
Nah, claustrophobic is he's talking about like he had to buy a new house because he was feeling claustrophobic. He had to get like a new Maybach. Gotcha. Just completely like rich flexing everybody. But
yeah, yeah.
That I had blasting on in the pause on the way to the game yesterday. So
the where my twin at is kind of fun. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, bro.
That's what's been stuck in my head. Yeah, yeah. For sure. For sure. Also a new Big Sean song dropped, by the way. And I'm
be honest.
A huge Big Sean guy. Not gonna lie.
I haven't listened yet, but I did see tweets saying that the NBA on TNT has their playoff intro song. So
I could see that actually. That's probably so accurate. That's probably so true. Listen, okay, it was like Humble 1 year, okay? They don't just put trash songs on there.
Facts.
But I get why people don't like Sean because he gets very preachy. Very preachy. And yeah. You know,
I really used to be a big Sean fan back like Dark Sky Paradise. Dark
yes,
Sky
that's Paradise, the one.
Like, but yeah, I'm gonna have to tap in and listen to that one.
Yeah, yeah, sure. All right. All right. Well, I think we're gonna get out of here. Got a day of work ahead, and yeah, we're gonna. I think the plan is to record again after that Dallas game.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kind of see how that goes. And typically it won't be as long of a break as it was between this episode and last. We're just kind of still getting a rhythm here between us and sort of what our scheduling looks like, but appreciate everybody tuning in. Always glad to take comments on whether you're hitting us up on Twitter, find Hunter at @HuntPatterson_. Definitely read his work at The Athletic, by the way, just wrote something about that last night game. No problem. Of course, man, you got great stuff going on over there. So yeah, let us know any questions either on socials or in the comments on YouTube, and we'll definitely get to them next episode. And here's hoping the Kings can bounce back against Dallas. But appreciate everybody tuning in, and please like, subscribe, and follow to stay updated with the latest episodes. And you'll hear from us again next couple days.